You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
24 minutes before noon, lovely slam poetry. Yes, we're going to podcast that, as well as the conversation in the middle hour with Sisonkem Simang, where we ask the question, is there a concept of multiculturalism that can be revised and revived, even in the teeth of some very important justice-centric critiques of diversity the world over, and particularly here in South Africa. So thank you so much for your interest in those and for staying with the conversation. Of course, this is Mzansi, so there's plenty of news we haven't got to. We've got enough news for the next 5 hours of radio, quite frankly. But what I want to focus on between now and noon with political analyst and host of Sunday Night Talk at 9, Karima Brown, is a very interesting and important speech that was delivered last night by Cyril Ramaphosa. And it touched on many things. And as I said to Nolazi this morning, I've got two levels at which I'm interested in this particular speech. The first level is at the level of granularity. Tanayo, I'm asking you how many spot breaks there are, Wena. Is Mahal distracting you there? Oh, yeah. Romance here in the studio between the colleagues. There are two levels at which I'm interested in this conversation. The one is just what he has to say on specific issues that matter to us. And then there's always the importance of reading between the lines, which is the march towards December and trying to become the next president of the party and eventually of the country as well. And that's exactly why I asked Karima, whom I'm grateful at short notice to have joined us in studio as well. Karima, thank you so much for saying yes.
Thank you for having me, Eusebius.
Let's play a bit of a clip. Now, the first clip I haven't actually heard where he talks about radical economic transformation. I'm very keen to hear what he says here because, you know, with weekly newspapers, you file your columns early. And I diss radical economic transformation in my Mail and Guardian column tomorrow. Let's hear what Cyril has to say about this theme.
This term, radical economic transformation, it has substance and it has meaning and it has relevance. And it is urgent and it must be done now because our people expect that. Now, radical means it must be something that is quick, that it must change, that must happen with great effect immediately. And economic transformation is what we are called upon to do, even by our constitution, so that it can be an economy that will serve all our people. It was in 2014 when this term started seeing the light of day. And it was used when we, at the government level, announced our medium-term statement. And we used the term when we said government's program of radical economic transformation is about placing the economy on a quantitatively different path that ensures more rapid, sustainable growth, higher investment, increased employment, reduced inequality, and the deracialization of our economy. That's when the term started seeing the light of day. And of course, we've packed it with a whole number of things, and that term still needs further definition. And I would say those who are dismissing this term, they should sit down, listen, smell the coffee, and realize that the economic transformation of our country cannot be it's non-negotiable. It has to happen, and it is going to happen. Whether people like it or not, the economy has to be transformed, and it will be transformed. Because it is a response to the needs of our people, and it is a national imperative. There is nothing abstract about radical economic transformation. It is fundamentally about inclusive and shared growth.
Okay. He says if you don't get RET, you need to sit down and smell the coffee. I think you misspoke there, Karima. I think you meant to say smell the McDonald's burgers and the buffalo wings. Be it as it may, that part of his speech, what do you make of it?
I think what the deputy president is trying to do is to reclaim the narrative around what he understands the African National Congress to be saying in its policy documents going toward the policy conference. As you know, the ANC is grappling with whether its economic policies that have been implemented for the last 22 years is getting us to deal with the three challenges that they identify in the economy, which is inequality, unemployment, and poverty. And of course, the deputy president being very candid there, saying that it is nowhere near dealing with those things substantially. But it's also important to realize and to note, Eusebius, in that over an hour address, he also quoted the Race Relations Institute, saying that even though they are critical of the ANC, they acknowledge that South Africa is not the same country as it was in 1994. In fact, he used quite strong words, saying you would be a fool to think that South Africa is the same place. So I think what Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa did last night at a constituency, which I think he believes, A, he can speak to, that he is from, he is a beneficiary of black economic empowerment, he's from the middle class, despite his trade union roots. He was speaking to a constituency saying that his understanding of radical economic transformation means that the economy needs to be deracialized, that black people need to be at the forefront of that economy, that black businesses should no longer be junior partners in the economy, that there should be haste with which the procurement arrangements and the set-asides that are in the policy documents and part of government policy should be hastened. So I think the deputy president trying to carve out a set of that narrative for himself. It's a very contested narrative. President Zuma has tried to impute meaning in it. And then, of course, also those who are very closely linked to the Gupta project around state capture also tried to take radical economic transformation as a narrative that explains their cause. So very contested phrase, Eusebius. And I think as someone who wants to run the country and the ANC after President Jacob Zuma, the deputy president used the opportunity last night to tell us what he thinks ought to be understood by that.
Karima, I know you're not a Sangoma, so far as I know, but do you think that he will have convinced the people to whom he was rhetorically reaching out with that phrase, both those business folk who benefit from notions of radical economic transformation, and also, of course, importantly, from a strategic alliance point of view, folks who normally wouldn't be in the same bed with him, i.e. the commies and the trade unionists listening outside?
Well, I think for me, that's probably the most important question, Eusebius. The ANC prides itself on being a broad church. It talks about a mixed economy. And of course, it's the extent of the mix that is always at issue and that is at the heart of the contestation, ideologically speaking and historically speaking, in the African National Congress. What is really interesting and what many people didn't hear him saying, he referred to a meeting he had with the leadership of Black Business Council prior to the address. So he actually had an audience with them, and it appears very much from that meeting that they raised certain concerns. Now, who can forget people like Mzwanele Manye and Danisa Baloyi in Parliament a few weeks ago, banging the drum of saying that, you know, the banks in South Africa is monopolistic, and that, of course, coming off the back of the Gupta businesses struggling to get the four major banks to do business with it. So they were definitely seen as a crowd that was identifying with a particular faction. So if you look at it just from a tactical and strategic point of view, I think the deputy president has, one, gotten them to listen, and two, saying to them that their issues are the issues of the African National Congress. In fact, in the rest of the speech, he says many of them are, in fact, active members of structures of the ANC, and they have already made fantastic contributions that should be ventilated at this upcoming policy conference. But he also said to them, they must stop lamentations. They must come with solutions. And more importantly, they've got to speak to the question of youth unemployment. They've got to speak to the issue of gender, and they've got to speak to the issue of internships. So So in the one hand, kind of almost dangling a carrot, saying we are here, we are listening. But on the other hand, saying unless you come with practical solutions, you can't very well, be taken seriously. So a very interesting approach. What is for me also interesting is Sello Rasitaba, for example, someone who is in the corridors of ANC factions all the time, someone very senior in that Black Business Council, hailing from Limpopo, where the deputy president is from. There's a lot of hidden hierarchies in that structure that the deputy president can relate to and connect with Eusebius. I think for me, what was really interesting was that the deputy president, someone who keeps his powder dry, generally putting himself out there and saying to this constituency, I am your guy. In fact, he said to them, not many people have access to the pinnacle of power. And those were his actual words. You guys have, use it. And so I think he was effectively making that overture. We'll have to see in the coming days and weeks how that overture is handled.
Yeah. I mean, so it's obviously all about signaling.
Yes.
And that's what's important. And it's going to be interesting to see whether the intent actually succeeds.
Absolutely.
Right? And we'll get there in a second. I want to play another clip. We've got a couple of clips there. We've got some good time left. Which theme shall we explore next, Karima?
I would like us to speak about or to play the corruption clips because it was right at the end of the speech. And I think here the deputy president was subtweeting the president in a major way. And I think it's important to understand the totality of the speech and not just get caught up in what he is trying to impute in the phrase radical economic transformation.
Did you just say subtweet?
Yes.
We're going to get you active on Twitter one of these days.
Not on your life, dude.
Listen to this clip.
And we will also not compromise, never compromise on our fight against corruption, patronage, and rent seeking. That we will also not allow the institutions of our state to be captured by anyone. Be they individuals, be they families that are intent on narrow self-enrichment. And that we will also not allow the formations of the democratic movement, our symbols, our history, and our policies to be appropriated in a pursuit of factional interests or in attempts to hoodwink the public through revolutionary sounding slogans, because we've now become a country of many slogans where everyone wakes up in the morning, comes up with a slogan.
Wow.
So do you think I'm still kidding around when I say subtweet?
No, we've also been playing that particular clip on our EWN bulletins here. It is an interesting one. And I've got an overarching question, but I'm going to leave that to last. Let's analyze that clip on its own. What do you make of it?
Well, I think that it's important to realize that the theme that ran through the Deputy President's speech last night was, in fact, his interpretation of the Freedom Charter. He started with the wealth shall be shared and, of course, spoke about the historical injustice from the way in which Black people were removed from land, made to be workers, speaking about the importance of restoring land to people, speaking about land hunger, and then speaking about deracializing the economy, the place of Black business in South Africa, and the fact that government sees Black business as a partner in creating this inclusive growth and the shared growth, and that there needs to be an urgency about it. And so that is the kind of overarching theme. But he also spoke about what he called South Africa belongs to all who live in it, Black and white, that it is the struggle for a non-racial South Africa is an important principle. Now, of course, we've seen how questions around race have been used by various factions in the ANC to advance and disadvance causes. We saw yesterday with Claudia Motsoeneng, for example, of all the board members that were tackled, it was Krish Naidu who was isolated, using very narrow or chauvinist and nationalistic understandings of who effectively is black in South Africa. We saw the same thing happening in KwaZulu-Natal.
Zuma's responses to the marches.
So the deputy president effectively saying that his ANC, his history, his understanding of the Freedom Charter is something else, is something different. And I think that it is intended to land for particular audiences, and it's intended to land in this contestation around ideas. But I think the deputy president also struck the right tone, which is often something that South African politicians don't get right. The deputy president made a very particular emphasis around the face of poverty being that of an African woman.
Speaking, I think we have a clip that speaks to
that. Let's have a listen.
Let's listen to that, because it will take us to the overarching question I want to unpack with Karima after we listen to this clip. We've got 10 minutes left. About six, really. If you have a quick question you want to ask of political analyst Karima, there are very few political analysts as sharp as she is. Give us a quick call. We'll try and squeeze it in. 011-883-0702 and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. And of course, you're welcome to have your own interpretation of the tone, the content of what Cyril Ramaphosa is saying. You are hearing the clips yourself. Do you have a different take to Karima's take? You can tell us that as well. In the meantime, this is a clip of the deputy president doing exactly what Karima just said. Set up for us, which is talking about the face of poverty.
More than two decades into our democracy, the face of poverty remains black, and in particular, it remains African. But more painfully, it wears the long face of an African woman. That is poverty. Wherever you go through the length and the breadth of our country, if you see a long face, you will see a long face of an African woman, because she's poor, she is black, and she has not benefited from the economic opportunities that our country ought to give her. That is the reality of our situation. And many of our people still experience social marginalization and quite a lot of economic exclusion.
He's obviously right, Karima, but you know, the thing for me, which is partly why I wanted you on the show, not just because I'm outsourcing my producing to you, is when I heard you speaking to Xolani Gwala this morning in a truncated version of this conversation, which is, what is your view as an analyst and as someone with a longer memory than me of how some of us as commentators, and definitely myself included, listen to this man and we think, oh, please, guy, where have you been? The face of poverty has been a black woman forever. Why didn't you tell me about that last year? Why didn't you try and reclaim a version of radical economic transformation that you can sell to the left, to businessmen and women who need BEE policies as a matter of economic justice? Everything that he has said is right. And now you're on to suddenly on the eve of December sound presidential. I don't know what to do with that, because a lot of what he says resonates with my own take as a citizen of the country I live in. I think to myself, like, you know,
politics
Johnny
is about-
come lately, vacuum, J8.
Well, the thing is, Eusebius, in truth, the deputy president isn't a Johnny come lately. He's actually been there all the time. He is someone who keeps his powder dry, and politics is about timing. Many people have urged Cyril Ramaphosa to speak, to seize the moment, to provide leadership. We heard this morning on Xolani's show, a very important lobby group in London that is a party non-specific that lobbies for Africa, saying that they want to hear more about what he is saying. We saw the Sowetan headline this morning, one of our seminal newspapers that speak to the black community, saying the president is in fact putting up his hand in a big way. What for me is interesting, Eusebius, is remember the trade union formation, COSATU, has already endorsed him as their candidate, right? Now, sure, Kusatu is a shadow of its former self, but it's an important endorsement nonetheless, considering that the state is the largest employer and the largest employee union for state workers is Nehao. The deputy president last night had to convince that crowd, the black middle class that was gathered there under the BBC. Now, of course, the BBC is not the only organization that represents the black middle class. You have a range of other formations. You also have black business Leadership South Africa, in which black business participates, but with other big monopoly businesses, traditionally white and so on. So I think the deputy president was trying to touch base with all those constituencies, with all those forces that makes up this broad church of the ANC. And of course, the broadness of this church and the expansiveness of its economic policies and the balance at which that scale falls is something that, like I said, is a contested notion.
Sure.
And I think what the deputy president is trying to come in on is saying, I hear you black middle class, I hear you black rural woman, I hear you young unemployed graduate, I hear you the farmer in Tofimvaba that needs land because they need to be involved in agriculture. I think he's trying to again do what the ANC has historically done, which is to try and present itself as the only political formation that speaks for the majority and not sectional interests, whether they are minority interests or class interests, for that matter.
Let's squeeze in a quick call. 30 seconds, Susan. Sorry. Thanks for your patience, though.
Hi, Suzanne. I just wanted to say, if Cyril wants white people to give their money to black people to uplift them, why does he not show us the way by taking some of his billions and using that to uplift his fellow black people? He is one of the wealthiest men in this country.
That's true, Susan.
All
of course,
he does is parade his bulls in front of people who are starving.
That's certainly true. What's equally true, Susan, is that white people don't have to wait for him to role model how to take redistribution of wealth seriously. Karima, I'm just going to give you 30 seconds. Isn't the truth that whatever we think about Cyril, whether he's a Johnny come lately or not, I think he is, but the merits of that doesn't matter. This guy is probably at this stage likely to be the beneficiary of strategic conversations going on about who is the least bad. He's not Baleka, he's not Nkosa Zana, and for some of us, he's not Lindy Ware, whose disdain for parliament scares me more than his bull does.
Look, I think, it's not that there's fantastic pickings, you know, I mean, I'll be the first to say that. And it's. I think it's got to do with the way in which the ANC approaches leadership. But I think you are right. For many people, a cross-section of people, from workers to CEOs, from young people to old people, he is looking increasingly like the person who is able to rally the entire country.
Sure. Thank you, Karima. Thanks for coming in.